KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
We're excited to have another very special guest with us today. And as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Well, thank you, Julie. And I'm really excited this morning to have, as our special guest, Kizzy Lopez. She's the coordinator for the Renaissance Scholars Program here at Fresno State. For those of you who don't know what the Renaissance Scholar Program is, the Renaissance Scholar Program at CSU Fresno is under the auspice of the Educational Opportunity Program. It's a comprehensive support program that supports ambitious college-bound individuals formerly in foster care. And we're going to hear more about that from our guest this morning, Kizzy Lopez. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you both.
Well, Kizzy was born in the Valley, actually not far from where Joe and I were. She was born on the Lemoore Naval Air Station, and she has been raised throughout California. She is here to talk about the Renaissance Program and about Foster Care Awareness Month. What type of activities happen during this month that celebrate foster care awareness?
Well, we typically have the Renaissance Scholars Recognition Ceremony, the beginning of the month, to recognize the accomplishments of our students. Mm-hmm. And I know there are a wide range of activities that are done throughout the community by different foster family agencies and social workers and nonprofits. This week, there was a recent luncheon for Comprehensive Youth Services, and they are hosting a luncheon for child advocates who do work with foster youth in the community. So that's one example of a lot of different activities to honor foster youth.
Do they also have programs for younger children who are in foster care to get them together or to celebrate?
I'm not aware of anything specific just for children, but I know different foster family agencies do different things. And so, you know, from time to time, I'll get invitations, but Fresno State doesn't.
Mostly the focus is to support and celebrate people who provide care or counsel or work with children.
Yes, it's mainly to provide awareness about the issues related to foster care and the system and those who serve foster youth.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So it says that you've been married for 15, and I like that you put here, wonderful years, and that you have two children. Tell me about your husband and how you met.
You know what? The wonderful is not on accident. I have a great husband. He's been a wonderful life partner and so supportive. So we met when I was 19 years old, when I was attending community college in a basketball class. And he was the only guy in class that would pass me the basketball because I was so terrible. Aww. So he took pity on me.
I'm guessing it wasn't pity. But yeah.
So it was a co-ed basketball class?
It was a co-ed basketball class. I was taking it for PE credits, and he was 7 years older than me. He was taking it to stay active. And so he took pity on me and passed me the basketball. And
that was a good move. I don't think that was a pity move.
Yeah, I'm seriously doubting it was a pity move.
That goes down on the books. That's
strategic,
one of the
smoothest
moves.
Opportunist.
So we ran into each other a couple times after that on campus. And at the time, I was living on my own and taking care of my 8-year-old sister. Mm-hmm. So I was very guarded when I was dating. And he saw me at my job at JCPenney's at the time, asked me out and asked for my phone number. And I said, I don't give my phone number out. I'll take yours. Because, you know, I'm a single young lady living on my own.
Absolutely. That's good.
And
I like that.
He said, well, I just got a job in Clovis and I'm moving up there. And my phone isn't hooked up yet. I said, yeah, right. Good story. So he just about walked away and I said, All right. I'll give you my number. First guy I gave my number to.
And the last. You chose the right one.
So we arranged a date a month or two later. And, you know, the rest is history.
Had he already moved to Clovis when you started dating? Or
he
did.
No, I have to tell you this.
I was going to say, why did it take 2 months for the date?
Well, because, you know, I was in foster care. And then when I transitioned to adulthood, my life was very complicated. I started out in community college homeless. Oh. So it took me a while to kind of get on my feet. And I had an 8-year-old sister at the time. And I also have a twin sister. So me and my twin sister, we got a place and we got custody of my younger sister because she wasn't in a good situation. And so my life was complicated. I worked full time, went to school full time, volunteered at my church so my sister could go to private school.
Wow.
I told my husband, I have Saturday available from 10 o'clock at night to 2 in the morning, and you have to drive yourself back home to Clovis. I lived in Visalia. Because you can't spend the night. I got an 8-year-old sister. You
right.
You got to hightail it back to Clovis.
I like that window of opportunity. If you're really interested, buddy, this is the time you need to clear on your calendar to get to know
exactly. You know, I was busy, and I dated guys my age, and they were nice, but they didn't want anything complicated, and mm-hmm. my stuff was very complicated. Mm-hmm. And because I had a twin sister, our date nights alternated. So every other night, not only could he not see me from like 10 to 2, my little sister was there with me at Denny's blowing bubbles in her chocolate milk.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, that's how you can see if a potential father is really existing there.
No, so yes, we dated like that for 9 months. And, you know, he was a keeper. He was a keeper. I was like, he was really interested in me. And he was just older and just more mature. And I said, why? No other guy has put up with this. Why are you dating me? I was like, curious. And he said, well, I could see that you're the type of woman I would want to build a life with. You know, he saw the strength in me where other young men were good. I have nothing negative to say about them. They're just younger and at a different place. So
but he knew what he was looking for, and you were it.
Yeah. And so he was just he's a sweet guy. And really, I owe so much of what I've been able to do to him, because he's provided me with so much love and stability and like a strong launching pad. That's why the wonderful is no accident. He really is an amazing guy.
Well, I'm so happy that you
name?
Juan Carlos.
Do you have a picture that we could put on Facebook?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
He's quite handsome. I met him the other night at the house.
I think he's a cutie.
I'm really happy that you have found that type of partnership in your life, especially when you talk about the struggles that you faced. And to be able to find a relationship that is rewarding like that, and that you can have as a role model for your children growing up.
Yeah.
That's a great blessing for you. And I'm really happy that you found that, and you have that for both you and Juan Carlos.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about the difficult challenges you had going to community college after you aged out of the foster care system. Were there support programs in place to help you, or how were you able to pull things together and to keep going forward in a positive way?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about that and backtrack a little bit. I was actually in foster care from the age of 11 to 14. Mm-hmm. And my parents struggled with addiction and mental health issues. Oh. And so they weren't able to provide the type of stability I think that they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And we were chronically homeless. There were a lot of different things going on in our home. And, you know, at 11, we were taken away. Mm-hmm. I was reunified with one of my parents at 14, but that parent had a relapse and things started going downhill. I'm being gender neutral on purpose. I've reconciled with my parents, and I don't want to embarrass anybody.
Sure.
I mean, the situation is what it is. And when I was 18, this parent was struggling with addiction and started to become abusive. So I left home with my Wendy's uniform and 75 cents in my pocket. And I thought, I'd rather be in the street than to live a life of abuse.
Wow.
And so I bounced around a lot from place to place. When I started community college at COS, it was tough trying to go to school every day. I mean, some days people would let me borrow clothes. I'm not proud of it, but there were days I stole food on campus or at grocery stores to try to get by.
Mm-hmm.
And
just out of desperation.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't have what I needed. And there were no infrastructures at COS at that time to support former foster youth. I'm, you know, quite a bit older than my students, nor did I know about EOP or any other resources. So I really struggled quite a bit, but there were people in my life who helped me. I mean, I didn't just do this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I had an aunt who helped set me up an apartment. She was struggling financially, but she did the best that she could.
Yes.
Faith has always been an important component of my life. So I had church members who did what they could to support me by dropping off food or giving me rides here and there. So I was very grateful to those people, but I was still quite vulnerable. And at the time when I was homeless, was approached, you know, looking back on it, I would say that this person was a predator. I didn't see it at the time, but trying to convince me to get into dancing in the sex industry. And I actually contemplated it because I wanted to relieve the agony of being homeless. And I wanted my younger sister, who was 8 years old at the time, I wanted to get her out of the situation that she was in.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a moment, I really considered it. But what stopped me really was, what would I tell my younger sister when I got her?
Right.
That I did these things I didn't want to have to say that I did that. And I don't mean this in a bragging way, but I feel fortunate enough to be blessed with my health and some intelligence. Mm-hmm. So I thought if I could just hold on a little longer, I'm going to get a degree. I'm going to try to do what I can.
Yes.
Without having to go down that path. And I don't downgrade or judge anybody who does that, because I've come really close to making that decision myself.
You understand the thought process that goes into
and the pain and agony.
Like you know, like a way out of a bad situation, even though it's another bad situation. But
yeah, but it doesn't seem like it. You know, you pick the less evil.
What was it about going to college? What was it that made you know that was going to be your path to a different type of life?
Growing up, school was always a retreat for me. Mm. I always seemed to excel in school. The teachers that I had were very caring. Mm-hmm. I looked forward to going to school. It was a relief from home and the things that were going on there. And it was just something that I was good at. And so, you know, and you always get this message, if you go to college, your life will be better. Mm-hmm. And so I really hung my hat on that hope that college was going to change my life. It has transformed me emotionally, psychologically, intellectually, and I'm able to not only benefit personally, but to use college as a launching pad and sense of hope for other youth who are in this situation.
Well, the skills that you gained through the education that you've acquired have put you in a position to where you're a great role model now for many students who are in the same position that you came from. And even though you might have been able to relate your story to someone who was going through what you were, I don't believe you would have had the same type of reach, and you wouldn't have been as effective as you are if you didn't get that education that you worked so hard and struggled so hard to achieve. Now, you have a bachelor's degree in interdisciplinary studies. You have a master's degree in educational counseling, and you're working on your doctoral degree in higher education leadership at Azusa Pacific University. Mm-hmm. Congratulations for going that far and for continuing to work. And, you know, you talk about your partnership with your husband. I know that in order to get a doctorate, the whole family has to be on board, and your children must be so proud of you. How old were your children again?
Our daughter is 9 mm-hmm. and our son is 11.
Wonderful.
And they are just, they're sweet. They're good kids. thank God they're healthy and they are very supportive. They know when mommy has had an extra tough day.
Uh-huh.
They try extra hard to be quiet. And it's like, mommy's tired. We need to help her. You know, they're sweet kids. They're really sweet kids. I'm so fortunate.
I love it how kids can sense that, like you said, and then they try in their own way to comfort you
mm-hmm.
With a little kiss or a hug mm-hmm. or a pat or something that our little 3-year-old Jess will do is he'll bring me over one of his cars. Here, Mama, you can be Mater.
Aww.
He tells me, you know, which if he lets you be Mater, that's
a big deal.
If you're Mater or Lightning McQueen, then he's giving you his best, right?
Mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
What are your children's names?
Our son Tyrell and our daughter Amaya.
Mm-hmm. Amaya.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, that is wonderful that you get to have their support and the example that you're setting for them. Now, it says that during your graduate work in the master's program, you volunteered as a counselor at the Educational Opportunity Program here at Fresno State.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were hired on, correct?
Yes. So I started my master's program spring 2006, mm-hmm. and I heard that counseling is a competitive field. And I was a stay-at-home mom prior to that with my kids for 3.5 years, so I didn't have mm-hmm. much of a network. I knew I had to get out there and do something. And I didn't have many opportunities because of the Central Valley, and I wanted to work in higher ed.
Mm-hmm.
So I must have called the EOP office every other day for 2 weeks begging to work here for free. And finally, a counselor was either gracious enough or just sick of my phone calls. And Marie Provencio, I won't forget, she called me. And I think the EOP office, because I was a student at National University,
mm-hmm.
they were like, well, we've never had an intern that, you know, wasn't from Fresno State because we pay our interns. And I said, I'll do it for free. So I don't think they were quite sure what to do with me. So they let me volunteer for a semester. And at that time, EOP serves first generation low income students. And they had an unfunded mandate from the state to say they had to outreach to foster youth. But, you know, Fresno State is always, I think, trying to go above and beyond. And EOP wanted to do more than just outreach. Mm-hmm. They wanted to provide a mentoring program. And so as an intern, of course, I was assigned to this project and worked closely with a counselor to put a mentoring project together for foster youth, you know, and them not knowing my own background. You know, it's a private identity, right? And so I remember Maxine asking me, how did you put all this together? And I said, really, I reflected back on my own experiences. I looked at existing models. And
nobody else would have had the perspective that you have to develop that type of a program.
Yeah. And there were other programs that existed. And it's my understanding that prior to me being here, other folks tried to get a foster youth support program off the ground. Mm-hmm. But I think the difference that my experience made is that I felt a personal connection.
Definitely.
And I think my passion drove it forward.
Yes.
You know, I was like, this is what I was called to do.
Right.
And all of the things that I had been through were preparing me for this calling in my life. Mm-hmm. And so I gave it 110% and worked.
That's what a passion tends to do to you. It just draws you in and you enjoy it so much. You just tend to give more and more and more.
Yes.
Especially when you start to see the positive results that you have seen with the Renaissance program.
Oh, yeah. The students inspire me to do this work. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I shouldn't say this on air. I would do it for free, but I like my paycheck. You know, the dirty little secret is I would do this for free. I love it. I love my students. It's nice to come to a place where I don't have a job. I get mm-hmm. to just love on these students, and in return, they inspire me.
Yes. You know? Well, talking about that inspiration, the other night we hosted the awards ceremony there at University House, and President Castro and I were just so impressed by the personal stories of the three students that were graduating this year. And when you showed the video montage of the different activities that the whole group had done throughout the year, and you could just see them forming bonds with each other that could really be a great support system. Describe for someone who is not familiar with and wouldn't have an idea, what type of challenges does a foster child face when they get to the college level?
You know, there's a low graduation rate for this particular population because of challenges with abuse and neglect and constant movement in child welfare. If they're fortunate enough to get to college, meeting life's basic needs become a real challenge because most students have a home to go to with mom and dad, have still that guidance and covering to help with things like budgeting and how do you figure out a checking account?
Right.
And how do I get a car for the first time? And how do I get an apartment without a co-signer?
Right.
At Fresno State, I feel like we're really fortunate because we do have campus housing. We do have the healthcare center with professionals. We have a lot of those things kind of built in our campus. But even with that said, our students still lack that guidance and support and that sense of family. And so I think what Renaissance Scholars offers is a wide range of support from college entry to graduation. So we do a 1-week summer transitional program, helping students adjust emotionally and psychologically from leaving foster care to coming to an entire campus and doing it essentially on their own.
Do they self-identify, or perhaps a social worker? Who lets you know that you have a student who might benefit from this program coming to campus?
On the CSU application, students can self-identify.
Okay.
And I get a report. Also through financial aid, students self-identify, and through EOP applications, students self-identify. So I get all of that information.
That's great.
And there is a tag on their student portal at Fresno State that says Renaissance Scholars if they self-disclose that information. And I have student assistants who call and personally try to invite students to the program. So if students self-identify, we will do our best to email or phone call. And then there's a notice on their student portal. So we try to do what we can to let students know that this service is available to them.
And how many people do you have that work in your office with the Renaissance Scholars?
We were just talking about
right
that earlier.
Right before we went on the air,
yeah. Yeah, we have a very small staff. It's myself, another full-time counselor, and at different times, we work with graduate interns or student assistants. So it's a small staff. We serve 40 students.
40.
And it, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but when I share the things that we do, you know, I always joke with my academic counselor, people who work with Renaissance Scholars better take the other duties as assigned seriously. Because I'll have a student that called me like, I don't know what to do. I have a flat tire. Uh-huh. And I happened to have a jack in my car, and my counselor knew how to change a tire. And I said, okay, she has a flat tire. We got to go. Uh-huh. So that's other duties as
right,
assigned.
Right.
Or picking up students that are stranded. I get phone call. You know, my students have 24-hour access to me.
Mm-hmm.
So students will call in the middle of the night, or I'm helping students move. We are a small family.
Kizzy, you do well in radio. We're 24/7 too. So if you get bored with what you're doing over there.
Julie will find a slot for you.
There you go.
We got okay. stuff going on 24/7, 365 days a year.
You know, you have to love this work. I mean, you have to have a heart and a passion for these students, because it's not a job. It's not
it's
for
a
the
lifestyle.
Pay. No, you have to love these students, and I do. I do.
Isn't it a part also of building trust? Trust that they probably do not or have not had in the past with another person, for you to be that accessible, for them to know that they can call on you, that you're the person, or your staff are the people that you can count on. I think that making yourself available the way you have goes a long way towards building that trust that mm-hmm. helps them to really accept guidance when you give them other advice about things going on campus, or, mm-hmm. you know, getting counseling or other stuff. Once they understand that, yeah, okay, she really does care about me.
Mm-hmm.
This is somebody that I can open up to.
Yeah.
And your personal life experience has to help with that trust level too. You know, they probably can say, okay, she gets it.
Yeah.
She knows what I'm going through.
I think so. I think it gives me some credibility, which helps with the initial rapport. But you're right. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I was in foster care or not.
Mm-hmm.
The level of trust has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do what I can to support students. Someone was there for me, and someone who was really important in my life. She's passed away. She was a mentor to me. I can never repay that debt. All I could do is pay it forward.
Right.
You know, and so she was there for me in the middle of the night when I broke up with a boyfriend, uh-huh. you know, when I needed a ride, I needed advice about becoming a woman. She was there. And so, mm-hmm. you know,
was she a teacher? Or
she wasn't. She was a lady at church. She was married. She was mm-hmm. in her mid-30s. She had a young son. And me and my twin sister used to watch her son.
Oh, okay.
And I would ask her about everything you could think of, uh-huh. even up until the time that I met my husband, about, you know, what do I do about becoming a wife?
And right.
I told her about one of the first crushes I had when I was in college. And I said, I don't know how to get his attention. She said, well, look at you, girl. You're dressed like a hobo. And
oh, no.
I'll never forget. I was really tomboyish. And she took me to get my hair cut, makeup done. She bought me girl clothes, like skirts. And
you got that makeover.
Yes. And she showed me how to walk in, like, platform heels were popular at the time.
Yeah.
And
some cute girl clothes.
Yeah, and I didn't know.
Yeah, but you know, it's wonderful to have somebody like that. I had aunts that did that for me too. I was in eighth grade, and I had one of my aunts
mm-hmm.
Paid for me to get my hair cut, you know, in a real beauty salon with
mm-hmm.
the whole thing, and you know, and then got me an outfit and stuff after that. But
were you a tomboy, Mary?
All of my friends were guys.
Mm. To answer your question.
Yes, all my friends were guys, and I liked hanging out with the guys because what you saw was what you got with them, you know, and so, you know, I had a lot of uncles, a lot of my cousins were boys too, and just, yeah, being out on the ranch, you know, you just get kind of rough and tough.
Didn't mm-hmm. wear a lot of dresses on the ranch?
No, but that's why, you know, as I was able to choose my own stuff when I got older, I think I went the other way. I really like really feminine kind of clothing now. And
mm-hmm.
Sometimes my daughter calls me on that. She's like, Mom, come on. You can dress it down a little bit. But it's fun to dress up. You know, there's certain occasions where it is. But going back to having that female role model for you that you felt comfortable you could ask anything to,
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
priceless.
Yeah.
And I like how she would just open up and tell you straight out what you needed
to
hear.
Oh, yes. Oh, she was very blunt. But that's what I needed at the time, was a truth teller, a covering, a big sister, so to speak. And me and my students, particularly the female ones, will talk about undergarments and what you're supposed to wear with this type of outfit, dating,
yeah.
etiquette, when they're having relationship issues,
uh-huh.
all those types of things. We talk about them if they feel comfortable sharing it with me. And like I said, it's me paying it forward. I can never repay the debt. And all I could do is give what was given to me.
Well, Kizzy, thank you so much for all the work that you do here at Fresno State and with the foster care students and helping them to reach their full potential and to truly be successful on the campus. I know that when we heard the stories about the students who are graduating, each one was a very active student during the time they were here on the campus. And I don't think that would have been possible without the support of the Renaissance program. Now, I know you're a motivational speaker. You do workshops and lectures, but you've also been recognized with some awards. You're getting ready to go to a ceremony right now. Tell us a little bit about that.
This was a really pleasant surprise. I am one of five recipients in our community for the 2014 Child Advocate Award.
Great.
From Comprehensive Youth Services, and they support vulnerable youth in our community through a wide range of services, and a large number of their students that they help are foster youth. So I was really honored to find out. I was nominated, I guess, by four people. One of them is my scholars. The other three, I'm not quite sure who they are. So I'm looking forward to finding out who that is, but it's really nice to be recognized for your work.
Definitely.
But more importantly, I'm grateful for the fact that it highlights and gives attention to a population that I really, really care deeply about, which is foster youth. And think it's such an appropriate time, since it is Foster Care Awareness Month, that someone like myself, who is an alum of the foster care system, is being recognized for helping this population. I think in community, these students can thrive. We've seen that at the banquet. And I want to continue to do this work and help foster youth not only survive college, but really thrive and be community leaders and give back. And I think that takes an investment from all of us.
Well, you're a perfect example of what you just described. And we're so grateful to have you here at Fresno State. And I know your students adore you and look up to you. Thank you for taking the time today to come and be on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Fresno State Renaissance Scholars Program Coordinator Kizzy Lopez, and of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus. Every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.